Hello and welcome to a very special episode of The Laydown. My name is Ryan, my pronouns are she, her, and I am so excited to share this interview I did with number one New York Times bestselling author Elizabeth George about her latest mystery novel in the Linley series, Something to Hide. This is the 21st novel in the series and solidifies Elizabeth George as one of the most acclaimed mystery writers of the last few decades. In this installment of the Thomas Linley mystery series, the murder of a cop leads to the discovery of a secret practice of various abuses of women among the Nigerian and Somali communities in London. This is a thrilling mystery that handles delicate topics with care, and I really enjoyed discussing it. So without further ado, please enjoy my chat with Elizabeth George. Hi, Elizabeth George. Thanks for being on the podcast.
Oh, you're welcome. It's great. I listen to podcasts all the time. I'm a huge podcast fan.
It's the best. I'm so grateful that podcasts have become as popular as they are because it's so much fun to listen to them and there's so many different types. Yeah. So I am so excited to chat with you about your new book. And I have to tell you, my coworkers, when they found out that I was interviewing you, every single one of them lost their minds. They're very excited.
Nice. That's nice.
You have a lot of fans at Gibson's Bookstore. So we're here to talk about Something to Hide. So can you give us the elevator pitch? Tell us a little bit about the new book.
Okay. Something to Hide investigates the death of a detective sergeant, a policewoman, who is found unconscious in her apartment, dies in the hospital when they have to turn off the life support. And as a result, in autopsy, they discovered that that she had a significant brain injury that couldn't be detected just by looking at her. So that's the investigation that's going on in the novel. And because she is a member of the police force, that brings in my detective, Thomas Linley, and his detective sergeant, Barbara Havers. Indeed, it brings in like my entire cast of continuing characters. It's pretty significant.
Yeah, it's pretty excellent.
And what they discover in very short order is that this particular officer, she was on a team to that investigates and puts an end to different forms of abuse of women. Mm-hmm. And this team actually does exist in London, through Scotland Yard. And so basically that's what their job is. It's a job that is huge because it's a very small team. And in this particular case, in Something to Hide, what this team is trying to do is to educate people, because the belief is, and I think it's true, that the only way this is ever going to end is if there's sufficient education of men, mm-hmm. so that the men will stand up and say, no, you're not going to be doing this to women anymore. Right. And that is probably the only thing that is going to be, that's going to put an end to it, because the belief system is so strong, and it has to do with, you know, a woman being pure and chaste if she's going to be able to have a marriage within this particular community, which is the Nigerian community in London.
Yeah. It's a fantastic book. I've been listening to it on Libre FM. The narrator's fantastic. It's great.
Good.
It's very, very compelling. And I have to wonder, I mean, this is the 21st book in the Linley series, right?
It is indeed. Yeah.
That's amazing. First of all, congratulations. That's awesome.
Thanks.
How do you find it difficult to keep it fresh, or do you have just like all of these stories in your head ready to come bursting forth?
Well, I have sort of a mental roadmap of what is going to be the ultimate disposition of the continuing characters. So I know where all these people are heading.
Cool.
The crime novel, of course, is the vehicle that I use to explore the lives of these continuing characters, as well as the lives of the people that are involved in the crime. Mm-hmm. So I have that big picture in my mind, but the individual crimes I don't. I'm, you know, sometimes I go to a location where I've decided to set a novel and I don't have a clue what the crime is going to be. And I'm just sort of praying that the location is going to give me the, give me an idea. Sometimes it, I do have an idea that's based on, you know, something that I've read or something that I've seen. And let me give you an example of that. I wrote a book called This Body of Death, and, it grew out of two things. One was the murder of James Bulger in England in the, I think, well, gosh, probably the late 90s maybe, or early 2000s.
Yep.
And he had been it was a terrible crime. I won't even go into it, but I was there when it happened, and so I sort of saw the unfolding of the investigation, which was not terribly long because they had CCTV footage. So it was based on that, but what I had seen something that I thought would be really good in a novel, and that is that I'd been at the National Portrait Gallery in London because I always like to see their Portrait of the Year award. Mm-hmm. And they do a big show of all of the finalists, and there was this one that I really loved, and as it turned out, it was not a fine, didn't win, mm-hmm. but it was such a haunting image that they used it in all their advertising.
Oh wow!
And so I thought, I really want to get that postcard because they always have postcards. So I went to the gift shop, and I saw one of those spinning things of postcards, and I saw there that there was that postcard of that particular image. It was of a woman, and it was part of her face, and her hair was blowing across her face. And so I started to walk over to get the postcard, and a man got there ahead of me, and he picked up the entire stack and bought the entire stack of postcards. And so I thought, oh, that's so interesting. And that became how this, you know, the ball starts rolling in this body of death. And so that, you know, that whole idea of, you know, somebody, you know, buying this stack of postcards, and the question was, why?
Yeah.
And so that's sort of what happens is, you know, an idea can come from anywhere. So in the next novel, I know it takes place in Cornwall. I know who the killer is. I'm not certain yet what the crime is, however.
Okay. Very cool. So once you have that sort of, you've got the crime, you're ready to go, what does your research process look like? Because they're very in-depth, your books.
Yeah, and it really depends on what it is that I am going to be sort of featuring in the book. Mm-hmm. So, for example, with Something to Hide, I knew that I wanted to set a book in London because I hadn't set a book in London for a while. Mm-hmm. I knew that I wanted to deal with this particular topic of the abuse of women, and so I begin usually by doing location research. In the question of, you know, when I'm setting a book in London, basically what I'm looking for is interesting places or logical places for various scenes to occur. And I end up going to, you know, places where the the ordinary schmo or the ordinary tourist would never go because it's nothing touristy about it. So and so when I'm going to these places, I usually have read about them in advance in a one or two or different books about London. And I go to those places, take pictures, take notes. And then when I conduct interviews in London while I'm there. And then when I come home, I start culling through all of my photographs and I have all my notes printed up and I decide, okay, basically, who is going to live where and what is going to happen where. And that's then based on all of the places that I've seen in London. If I'm doing it in, in another location out of London, like Cornwall, for example, I then go to specific places in Cornwall that I have read about and places that suggest story to me. And I look to see if there is something in that particular location that can become part of the novel.
That's really cool. I love that sort of style of finding the place and kind of letting the place help you tell the story. That's really cool. And I mean, of course you have great advice. You literally wrote the book on, you wrote Mastering the Process, right. Which is a fantastic book. Do you have any additional tips for maybe some aspiring writers who might be listening? Do you have like a favorite tip or secret that you like to share?
Well, you know, I do think that that persistence pays off, and so does self-discipline. I have never been the kind of person who waited to be inspired to write. I always have written because I love to write, and because of that, I've never had to drag myself to the computer or the word or the typewriter or whatever I was using at that time. And I do think that that it helps if people really develop a sense of discipline and create for themselves a schedule that they can actually follow on a daily basis. I work to a schedule that appeals to me because I'm obsessive compulsive, and I'm like the queen of multitasking. So I have a schedule. I follow that schedule every day, except for Saturdays and Sundays. On those days, I have a different schedule. Generally speaking, I utilize my time really well. And I think that that is something people really need to learn to do if they want to be writers, is how do you utilize your time? Mm-hmm. You know, P.D. James, when she first started writing, she had a job. She had to support her two children. And so she just got up at 4:30 in the morning to do her writing first before her kids were up and before she went to work. Mm-hmm. And it was that consistency, I think, that served her very well.
Yeah, I think that's that's something that I've heard a lot of authors mention, is that consistency and making it happen and making it, you know, treating it like your job even before it's your full-time job. And I think that's great advice.
I mean, so much of it is you suit up and show up at the place where you're writing, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and, absolutely.
And that's what I do. And I do it, 5 days a week, and I do it whether I'm at home or whether I'm traveling. I know that I have a certain dedicated time during which I will be ugly writing, and that's just how it is.
And clearly it's working.
and if I'm in Europe or, if I'm on a vacation or something like that, I just get up earlier than my husband or my traveling companion. I just get up earlier than they do and do my work first. So, it's not like you don't have a life if you start
writing. Right,
it's
right.
Just that your life looks a little bit different than it used to look like.
Yeah. So to bounce back a little bit to the research portion, this book, and we won't spoil anything, but we've touched on it a little bit in that, you talk about the Nigerian community and some of the abuses that happened to women there. And I wonder, was that one of those pieces that you knew you wanted to write about? Did you know kind of before you even started writing a little bit about what was happening? Did you have to do additional research into that? What did that process look like? And how did you, because you handle it really deeply and delicately in this book. I think it strikes a nice balance in this book. So I'm just curious about the process there.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Well, I've been made aware of this particular thing that was going on it's going on around the world. And because my book takes place in London, the question was, was this also taking place in London or in England? And I had known for a while that it was, because the British started fighting it first at the airports by questioning people who were leaving, like parents and children, or mother and a daughter, or father and a daughter, who lived in England but were traveling together to their native land which this particular abuse takes place. And so the customs officials were immigration officers, the ticket takers. I mean, everybody was made aware that if you see these kind of people, these individuals, you really have to question them very, very thoroughly. And then they were also trained that when somebody comes back, if they are with a small daughter who is now dressed like an adult, then that's another indication of what has happened to this child. Mm-hmm. So I knew that was going on. And then the question was, well, you know, was it still going on? Because that had been many years ago. And right. So I discovered that there was this very small group of police detectives who were part of a small organization. Well, they were part of a, I don't want to call it an organization, a team. They're okay. Part of the team who was fighting against all of the different abuses of women in London. And so I interviewed them and got more information about how it was, how this was going on and what they were trying to do about it as well.
Yeah. Yeah, like I said, it is handled really well in this book, I think. I was reading it and it's very delicately handled, but also like very clearly like, this is wrong. This is not a good thing. And right. And I thought you did a really, really good job of handling that situation. I also am always so impressed when American writers can write British books, sort of. What does that look like? Because you're an American writer, but you write British procedurals, police procedurals, which is really cool. But how did that come about, and how does that work?
Well, it came about because I had been teaching a class at El Toro High School in Southern California at the time. This class was it was called The Mystery Story, and it was basically the deconstruction of crime stories. And, that was just like a vehicle to teach different things in English in junior and senior level of high school. And to learn how to teach the class, which I had been given, it was just assigned to me. So to learn what I really wanted to do, I had to figure out, what is a crime story or a mystery story? And so I started out with with a lengthy essay that Dorothy L. Sayers wrote about crime stories. And so I used that kind of as the basis. And so after a while, I started thinking, looking at these stories and looking at these novels, I started thinking, I think I could do this. I think I could write one. I had always loved writing. I've written since I was 7 years old. So I always loved writing. And I knew that, in my heart, I knew that's what I was really supposed to be doing, but I had avoided it for a long time because I didn't know what I was going to write. So this gave me the vehicle to do what I always wanted to do. And so when I started out in the crime novel, it never occurred to me to write anything but a British crime novel because, first of all, I'd read extensively in British crime and really virtually no American crime novels at all. So of course I was going to write a British crime novel. And I never thought, oh, this could be difficult. I don't ever start out with that idea. Oh, no. It could be a tough book to write. I don't do it. I write what I really want to write. And what I really wanted to write was something that took place in England. I love England.
Yeah. No, it's great. I was listening to it and I was like, wait, maybe she is British. So clearly it you've after 21 books, you're crushing it.
Thank you.
And now this is a PBS and BBC show, right? I haven't seen it myself, but I've had customers tell me about it, that they have discovered your books because of the show.
Yeah, and that was actually one of my big hopes in selling the books to the BBC. And they did, I'm really not sure how many they did. I know that there was a certain point which I decided not to give them any more novels, not to sell any more novels to them, but to allow them to do their own shows with Lindley and Havers as the central characters, as long as I had approval of the screenplays. So nice. They've done a number of them. And that was really cool, that because it, my hope was that the books, that the films would be good enough to bring more readers to the series. And I wasn't really emotionally invested in the films otherwise. I think that when a writer sells to film or television, that it's a good idea to just kiss it goodbye and hope for the best. So that's sort of what I did. And, I think that they did a pretty good job. Certainly not my image of what the characters look like, but the two main actors, I think, really captured the flavor of the books.
Yeah.
And so perhaps someday there will be a relaunch of the series, which I would really like. And, maybe that'll happen.
That would be fun. Yeah. As a bookseller, I can tell you that we've had several people come in getting your books and they're like, I was watching the show and then I realized it was a book series and now I have to read all the books. And so they come in and stock up.
Well, and one of the things I always like as a reader is to discover a writer at the point in that writer's career where they've written a whole bunch of books.
Yes.
Because then I don't really have to wait till the next book comes out. I just go right back to the beginning and start reading them all.
Exactly.
And, so for anybody who comes to my books now through Something to Hide, and if they, anybody who likes it, then they have all these 20
big
other
backlog. It's the best. It's the best. There's nothing better than discovering an author that you love and then realizing they have a huge list of books that you can go back and read. It's the best. It's the best feeling. Before we wrap up, I do want to talk a little bit about your Elizabeth George Foundation. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about that?
Oh, sure. The Elizabeth George Foundation was something that I started in, I think it was 1997. I could be wrong. It could have been 1999. I was in the late 90s. Mm-hmm. And what I wanted to do is to create a foundation that supported unpublished writers by giving them the experience of being able to write free of any other burdens for a year of their life. And that's how it began. Initially, we had to sort of scout around to figure out who was going to get a grant because we were just a real neophyte organization. But over the years, the foundation has attracted some pretty amazing writers who had not been published and are we're proudest of Ocean Vuong, who applied for a grant. He applied to a grant to go to an MFA program, and he sent us a sample of his poetry at the time. He had not written a novel, and it was sort of like a no-brainer. Very rarely does the board just go, So we sent him through graduate school. It was one of his letters of recommendation said, "No matter what Ocean asks for, give him twice as much because he's so humble he will never tell you what he really needs." So we've had a number of people who've come through and who have have been published and who have become award-winning authors, and that's really great. We also support the arts as they offer different artistic activities to disadvantaged youth, disadvantaged children. And so we're involved with that as well. The main thrust of the organization, though, is for unpublished writers, for poets at any point of their career, and for emerging playwrights.
That's amazing. I love that.
It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, I got to see Ocean speak at a book conference a few years ago, pre COVID, and wow, the entire room was just sobbing at the end.
Yeah,
what a talent!
Special. Yeah.
Before I let you go, are there any books you've read recently that you'd like to recommend? I know it's an on-the-spot question.
I am reading Harlem Shuffle by Colson Whitehead.
Yes.
And I would definitely recommend that. It is, it's a wonderful book. He just sort of goes from strength to strength. And in this book, he's taken Harlem in the very late 1959 and then into the early 1960s. Mm. It's done in sections. And, it's an amazing depiction of time and of place, and And there are really wonderful moments of humor in it as well, as this man sort of navigates life in Harlem and whether he's going to be straight or be crooked as far as his business goes. It's a really good book. He's a wonderful writer, and I would definitely recommend that.
Yeah, that's a fantastic recommendation. I think that's all I have for you. I know that you are very busy with your tour schedule today, so I will let you go. But thank you so, so much for chatting with me today. And I can't wait to hand sell Something to Hide to everyone because it's fantastic.
Thank you. Thanks very much. I will sign off.
Have a great day, Elizabeth.
Thank you again to Elizabeth George for joining me on the podcast. Something to Hide is available now. You can email us about the podcast at thelaydownpodcast@gmail.com. Our website is gibsonsbookstore.com, and we're also on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok, and we'll put all those links in the show notes along with all of the books that were mentioned during this episode. Thank you all so much for listening. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll know when we upload our next episode, and consider leaving us a nice review. Until next time, we'll see you in the stacks. Bye!